is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 406. I'm Nicole Shiro, and I'm here with me! We're missing Lisa, we're missing Nick, we have some other folks co-hosting with us today. You're listening to KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby and KOOP.org. Each week we take a look at theater from many angles. If it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
Come with me.
It's Wednesday, March 29th, 2017, and today on the show we have Jarrett Productions with their show, The Herd. We also have the Barron's Men on with As You Like It. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions, including the news and views from the world of theater in Austin, New York, Sheboygan, and beyond. Stay with us. Oh, well, I just cut that of cutting my microphone off, so no more at, did y'all know what that was? I'm gonna turn on some mics here. It was Willy Wonka. It was Douglas Hodge. It was London. I'm just really excited. There's something about that when I hear dun dun dun. That I was singing. I go, I turn into a little kid. There's something comforting about that melody. Mm-hmm. No one has to sing. So, yes, you got to hop on into this microphone. Get up close and personal, Kate. I'm going to introduce everybody because it's just me. Lisa's gone.
Womp, womp.
Nick is gone. Womp, womp. Bob Tolero's here, and he sits in on that co-host chair.
There he is.
Hello, everybody out there in Radio Land.
Yes, yes. And we have, and also with Bob Tolero, we have David Jarrett. Hello,
hello.
David. We have the Amber Quick.
Hello.
Hello. Jan Phillips.
Hello there.
Oh, my goodness. Michael Osborne. I was like, Michael, I know the first name. Let me get the last.
You got it right. Hi, woo! Everyone.
Kate Clark.
You said Kate and Clark so beautifully.
Oh, you know, I strive. I worked on Kate Clark.
So
I worked on Kate Clark.
You
and
so many other. No, go.
And Robert Dickey, how are you?
Dickey.
Did I just say Dickey? Oh, I did say Dickey.
Yeah, it's okay.
You know why? Because why wouldn't I mess it up? Right. We're on live radio, so let's say it wrong. Even though I know you and I can say your last name. Yeah, potato, potato. We've had a lot of that lately in the last 2 weeks with songs. But so I just want to say hello to all of you. Thank you for joining my party and having. I have a circle of Coco hosts today, and it's a little exciting. Living on the edge here on Offstage and On the Air. And I also want to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful hour of International Folk Bazaar. Kim rocks it every week. Mm-hmm. Lisa and I always say that, and I feel like a broken record, but I truly, truly, truly believe it when I say that Kim rocks it every week. So thank you. Weather? It's nice out.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. It's nice out. So it's nice out.
A little breezy.
We introduced everybody right off the bat because there's just a lot of voices. So I'm going to go right at it because we have a lot of stuff to get into. And there's some things I really want to get everybody's opinion on. Since I have a group of unopinionated people,
right.
I thought I'd ask about opinions. So there was a few openings this week. There was two off-Broadway, two Broadway. I put this one off Broadway first, which is funny because Lisa likes to do the Broadways first, but I am kind of like, hey now, John Leguizamo had another show. Bob just gave me the look of, what? You missed it, Bob Tolero. You were there last week and you missed it.
That. Why wasn't I there?
I don't know. It's called Latin History for Morons. and here's it for the radio listeners. And for our viewers inside, there's this great picture of him.
Lovely.
He kind of looks like he's Matilda meets the King meets
right?
John Leguizamo. He's in front of a chalkboard with a hat and
School of Rock.
Yeah, somehow. Very School of Rock. Yeah, he has a Matilda School of Rock thing going on here.
He's classier than Jack Black.
I like them both though. They're very different. It's the show that traces the marginalization of Latinos in U.S. history and the vital roles they've played, from a satirical recap of Aztec and Incan history to stories of Latin patriots in the Revolutionary and Civil War and beyond.
How did they get all that on the marquee?
Well, yeah, I think that's why they just have that short title. It's a long one. But he said, his quote is, just imagine you're a white kid and all of a sudden everybody's Latin and everything they're teaching you is Latin and you don't hear anything about yourself or your contributions. And it's really weird and unfair because we've had huge contributions. So people loved it.
Good.
Not surprised. I'm not surprised at all. Even the Ben Brantley loved it. We were talking about Ben's been a little jaded lately writing so many reviews. And he really, really understand it. He said, this is grandstanding and leaping and sliding and hopping. An actor and a monologuist. He's equipped himself with the requisite accessories, including a blackboard and an industriously wielded eraser. He said it's a very harsh, funny, surprisingly poignant one-man show for the smoke of firing synapses. So I love this guy. Yeah. I know. Let me fire up the jet, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Stop your shows you're here to talk about. Let's just go to New York.
We don't have a show on Sunday.
Oh, see, you know, let's just, let me call John. We'll get that all taken care of. So I'm excited about that. And good for him, man. It's a lot of one-man shows and good for John. So you go. And I hope someone writes about his contribution as a Latino, as he's sitting here doing it for everyone else.
I read a short snippet about it. The person who introduced me to that was, of course, Rudy Ramirez.
Ah, yeah, he was on just last week.
He's so awesome. And
Come talk closer. Be personal with the mic.
I will be personal with the mic. I just read a little thing that said that John Leguizamo's inspiration for this was getting to learn a little bit about the huge contribution that Latinos and Latinas have made in our country and being like, wait a minute. Why didn't I know
there
about
was a,
this?
There was another article, and I'll try to find it so we can post it, that really about the research that he did, and he said he learned things that he never even knew and just started snowballing. I'm like, I can imagine. I mean, I go down the rabbit hole doing my ancestry tree, so I can only imagine going down the rabbit hole of everybody else's ancestry trees. You're trying to, figure out history.
So it just sounds fascinating.
It really does. I love him. Next play, we're just going to quickly graze over because it's not a lot of nice stuff to say. Well, I'm wrong because Time Out gave it a thumbs up if you go to Did He Like It. So, I mean, and Entertainment Weekly did too. But this is the Broadway show Sweat. It's by the Pulitzer Prize winning Lynn Nottage. With warm humor and tremendous heart, Sweat tells the story of a group of friends who've spent their lives sharing drinks, secrets, and laughs while working together on the line of a factory floor. But when layoffs and picket lines begin to chip away at their trust, the friends find themselves pitted against each other in a heart fight to stay afloat. It was really kind of all over the map. Nothing was like, yeah, I gotta go. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what to take of it. And there's more I want to talk about. So it opened.
So that happened.
Nothing bad happened. I mean, if you go to Did He Like It, all the reviews, like the little guy in the fence, they're pretty even with thumbs up, thumbs down, and thumbs in the middle. So it's not, Ben wasn't so nice. So I just didn't download his little review there. But another off-Broadway one was The New Yorkers. And the pictures of it, I guess I just like the 20s and all those beautiful glams and 40s and all those different periods. This was 40, excuse me. But I love that the title of the review is Encore Serves a Bathtub Martini in the New Yorkers. And I was like, I'll take a bathtub martini. Yeah. Hello. So it's 20s, Prohibition. It's Cole Porter, first of all. Who doesn't love Cole Porter? Oh, you rock. Said the only hangover symptom you'll feel is the blush that comes from having laughed incontinently at jokes that didn't seem all that funny in the daylight. That is hilarious.
Is that from the bathroom gin or from...
I have no idea, but I was like, that is hilarious. He said the choice cast has singing shticks. It makes it the most puerile silliness that deeply sophisticated and high sophistication that can look sublimely silly. I was like, Ben Brantley had a good time. So that, I don't know. I would like to see that. That's an off-Broadway one. And then the big one, and this title made me giggle. Lisa and I have talked about this for a few weeks now as Miss Saigon opened. Here's the title for this review from one Ben Brantley. Return of the Little Copter That Wowed in Miss Saigon. I was like, that's, you were reviewing the copter coming back.
How was the helicopter's performance?
He actually talks about it because I don't think he had a lot to talk about. He actually, I noted, 4.5 paragraphs bringing up the whole Jonathan Pryce fiasco again. Right. And I'm like, that was how long ago? Are we reviewing this show? Right. So, yeah, I know. I found it funny. He said, he did make a comment. He said, there's a promise in this sound, which is that of a hovering helicopter. Miss Saigon, first stage in New York in 91, is destined to be known forever as the musical with the helicopter. Rather, as Phantom of the Opera is the musical with the falling chandelier. And Pa 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 is a pledge that an egg beater will indeed materialize. I was like, oh, okay. And he said, it goes well, but not until the second act. He literally writes that like in the next sentence. I was like, oh, the copter comes. The headlights were blazing. The blades were generating winds. It was sweeping the house. And if you were nodding off during the previous couple of hours, don't worry. You'll surely waken to this air disrupting apparition.
What if, like, somebody that's really into trains, he's just obsessed with helicopters?
I don't know. Well, he made a comment of, if you were asleep, like the t-shirt-wearing man two seats down from me, you will surely awaken.
Terry Teachout spent a good deal of time in the Wall Street Journal talking about the helicopter as well, and he didn't really like the
updated
production that much, but he said it won't matter because people will go and buy tickets anyway. And the helicopter is marvelous. It's huge. It's big.
It is. You know what? I laughed. I used to love that musical. I laughed. I did. I admitted to Nick and Lisa last week. I watched them perform a song on the Today Show, and I caught myself singing every single word, singing every single word. Didn't miss a word. Haven't listened to the album in 20 years. And still going, oh, I love it. Oh, Gigi comes out here. Oh, yeah, this is good. And still going, oh, I actually think I like that musical. And it would never be anything that'd be like, yeah, Miss Saigon. Like, I don't know. There is something special about it.
Yeah, if you love it, you can go see Miss Saigon. If you don't love it, you get a nap and helicopter.
And helicopter. So
the best of both worlds. It's a show for everyone.
It is a show for everyone. It is a show. All right, I'm going to cruise through some of this because I do want to play a little bit of stuff. Those are the openings. They were kind of all over the map as far as content of shows and a little all over the map as far as, well, I guess I really did Ben Brantley today. What Ben Brantley thought. Today on What Ben Brantley Thought.
That's right.
Oh, wait, there's a website for that. DidHeLikeIt.com. So I'm not going to talk on this a lot because I know Lisa's going to be excited. I am so bummed this news came out while she is not here this week. But they announced the Broadway premiere of Marvin's Room. And it is going to be one Janine Garofalo and Lily Taylor. And my, for the radio listeners, how well those women have aged. I am very jealous. I want to look that good. I don't feel that. It's going to be, Roundabout is doing it. It'll be in June. It's going to be in a limited engagement through August 27th, officially opening June 29th. I'm not going to talk more about it because Lisa loves the Marvin Room. She did the Marvin Room at the Play Theater. I don't want to take that from her because I know she has a lot to say. This I'm bringing up for her too because she loves the Joseph. Not my favorite. I'm more of a superstar kind of gal. But there, and this, I had to print this picture because the picture of Donny Osmond that they captured is just so wrong. It's so right. But they are making, stop the presses. They are making a movie of this, which is going to lead to one of our conversations we're going to have here in a bit. Elton John is going to do this with Andrew Lloyd Webber, which is interesting. So it's like, Well, Donny Osmond was in the in a production of it, a revival of it on Broadway a couple of years ago. I sat through that, and yes, I did.
No helicopter.
But it's interesting because I can't find anything about is Tim Rice still involved in it or not. But Elton has that relationship with Tim Rice, yeah. And obviously Andrew Lloyd Webber has that relationship with Tim Rice. You know, writing a few things. So I don't know. Could be interesting, but yes, they're making, it's going to be an animated feature, I may add. Not just maybe they're going to make an animated feature. I don't know everything that's going on, but last night something exciting happened.
What happened?
Last night.
Tell us.
Preview started for Wonka. Wonka, you say? Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. There aren't any songs yet for me to share with Christian Borle or this production, which is why we played Douglas Hodge. But there is this awesome little video interview with Jack O'Brien and Christian Borle and the two of them cruising around the Strand together in New York. And I'm going to play a little bit of it because it just is so endearing. I felt I wanted to share.
Here we are at the Strand, one of the most amazing, fantastic, unimaginable places in New York City.
And we're here in the rare book room.
And here they are. Roald Dahl, Charlie, and the Great Glass Elevator, which I'm told is one of the first versions of this story that happened, from the page to the stage, and nobody did it like Roald Dahl. Oversized poetry, that's me.
What I'm curious about with Willy Wonka is figuring out how to make him somehow more grounded. Like, where's the humanity in Willy Wonka?
He's not scary, but he's sort of wonderfully disturbing. Mm-hmm. Because when he looks at the crazy things around him, he accepts them as sort of not a problem.
Yes.
And so there's something both sinister and delicious about that. That is, to me, unique. I've never seen a character...
I edit it because it went on and on and I kept going. He talks about the Oompa Loompas. Jack gets so excited about the Oompa Loompas and he's like, we just unveiled them in a rehearsal and everyone was jumping and he gets totally excited. Then they go cruising around the Strand looking for Jack O'Brien's books and he's angry that they're not in there. In an endearing way. But it's just a lovely, lovely little video that we'll have to share. And they both talk about these characters. You can see the sparkle in their eyes. I think all these characters just mean something so different for all of us in a different way. I'm so excited. I don't know. We're going to go out. I went in with a Wonka song. We played a little of this. We're going to go out with another Wonka. I didn't go full Wonka. But
if it's Cheer Up Charlie, I'm going to cry.
It isn't Cheer Up Charlie. Okay, no. It's a little saucy. It's a little Veruca, but that's okay. Amelie, and when we go out of this little section, I'm going to play this song. Amelie just put up a music video, not a music video. They put up a trailer of one of the songs from the show with Philippa Sue. It's Times Are Hard for Dreamers. It's quite lovely and endearing, and it really... It seems like it's just such a nice nod to such a charming little movie and a charming character that, you know, those don't always translate so well from one to the other. And it looked so charming. I'm like, am I seeing charm through video? So I'm kind of excited about it. And I'll play a little bit of that track going out. Broadway Zone, which they are their website, B-Way Zone, their website for kids to learn more about Broadway. They started this new series called Get to Work. And this was the second week. And this week they were with the dresser from On Your Feet. And Ryan got to learn how to do the dressings and what it means to be a dresser. Last week was the first week. And it was the stage manager with a Grobe show. The Great Comet. Natasha Pierre and 18 whatever the heck year. That long title. And it was the stage manager. So they're going to do this each week and have this video series. How awesome sauce. Like, the On Your Feet costume change was a 43-second costume change out of one of Gloria Estefan's crazy ruffly numbers into like this slinky thing. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So love that they have that going on. There's this great article. High school musicals should be respected like sports programs.
That is right. Yeah.
Now, we all know I love my sports. That's just totally out there. Mm-hmm. But I love This is someone talking about, hey, they need to be funded and treated the same within schools. Like, my love of going to the Texans has nothing to do with y'all doing a show. But this is, like, so important. We've said this for multiple times. I mean, if you don't have... if your city doesn't have the resource or the outlet to be able to give you a high school of performing arts where you're, you know, able to be submersed in that, I was lucky. I'm one of those people. A lot of my friends weren't. If you don't have that resource within your city and you're not getting this full kind of, you know, experience. This guy wrote this really impassioned article and he really went through like what he learned as a sports player in high school and what as a performance player. And that he basically was saying that performers work harder and have more rigorous than sports teams do. And he was explaining from rehearsal process, even though, like he said, athletic activities have a more frequent display of their efforts. But he said, it's just the way, and musicals have a very little payoff for their amount of effort. Mm-hmm. And he thinks that's the balance why people don't always see the importance. And it was just a different, we've always argued, hey, you should look at us like the football team. Hey, give us the money like the cheerleaders. But he really wrote out some wonderful little thoughts. I love this. This made me really, really happy. And he wrote, sports are great. Don't get me wrong. I loved playing volleyball, basketball, track, and swimming. But there were experiences that were none like that on those teams by those from musicals. Sport was a challenge with the body and slight amount of tactic, while musicals require physical and mental endurance. The next time you hear someone say, it's just a musical, just remember that musicals deserve as much respect as sports since they are just us, and just as, if not, more demanding.
That's fantastic.
You know what? The thing printed all funky, wackadoodle. We're going to link it on the site. It was an odd news station that I got it from, too. It wasn't one that I was familiar with. It was like a local town, I think, that the guy wrote in. And it printed weird, so I can't. The header is not on there. It's mystery writer. This one we're going to have to put online because it's visual, and I didn't open my laptop to show you guys. But the Hairy Ape, Eugene O'Neill's The Hairy Ape, is being done right now at the Park Avenue Armory. And it's basically like submersion. These sets that they have built are out of control. The New York Times did this amazing visual photographic piece on it. That are just, we have to post it up. It's called An Industrial Hellscape with You at the Center.
Whoa.
Yeah, right? It is. It's 360. And they talk to everybody. There's a proscenium stage, but it's a 360. Bobby Cannavale is in this one. Yeah. There's a conveyor belt. There's a turntable. These giant cages that they built almost look like they're shipping containers with like bars taken out and the seats go up. It is unbelievable. And this photographic piece was just so cool that I wanted to bring it up and say, hey, we're going to post this so that y'all can see it because it's pretty awesome sauce. Lisa's excited about Anastasia. But just so you know, if you like the animated film, the stage musical changed a whole bunch. So don't go in expecting the same thing. Now, this is what I want to talk about. I'm just handing Bob everything. Like, here you go, Bob. What up, Bob? What up, Bob? So there is a article out. We're talking about movie musical adaptations. There's an article out right now, and it is 10 pages of a list of a schedule of all the upcoming movie musical adaptations. I don't even know what to say by how many, and I kind of want to get some people's opinions on some of these, because some of them I personally was like inside giddy like a little kid, yeah. And some I was like, why? Well, Beauty and the Beast started with that, just came out. Post-production right now, Hello Again. Hello, Audra McDonald, Cheyenne Jackson, T.R. Knight, Martha Plimpton, Rumor Willis, I could go on and on. I'm excited about that one. 13. Which I am kind of, do you guys know 13?
No.
Jason Robert Brown wrote it. This is actually, and Lisa and I have had this conversation because I looked at Lisa and I go, that's why we have Ariana Grande. She was not Ariana Grande, the pop star. She was Ariana Grande, the Broadway star who was 13 starring in 13.
Oh my God.
With Jason Robert Brown. And then went on to be Ariana Grande, the pop star chickamadee. But she's got Broadway. So this is that musical. And it's about 13-year-olds, children's, the kids. So they're doing that. HBO is doing American Idiot.
The Green Day.
It's about time. The,
okay. Yep. That's what I figured. I was kind of surprised. Beautiful, which was just here. Beautiful, the Carole King musical. Mm-hmm. Tom Hanks is tied to that one.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
As a producer?
So it's sort of like, what was it? That thing you
yep.
do?
Gary Gautzman, Paul Blanc, and Tom Hanks are going to produce. Yeah. Director and cast mm-hmm. are still TBA. It's going to be Sony. Meow, Cats is coming.
Okay.
A movie version of
are
Cats.
Are tickets on sale yet?
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, there's no. a director. It's Universal and it's Tom Hooper. Finding Neverland. Weinstein has announced he is going to be producing it. It's Weinstein. Guys and Dolls.
Huh.
I can't believe it. Yes, animated. and they said it's a they're gonna update and do some stuff. I don't know. Gypsy's but Barbara's been doing Gypsy for 10 years now, so call me back when that's done. In the Heights, which I knew about because Jay-Z just yes. announced that he's producing everything now, which could be a good thing or a bad thing. Did you see Annie? So no. you know.
But I did see the Get Down, and if they can get an ounce of that,
I'm just it, I'm just saying it could be brilliant, be. And it yeah. could be. Wrong.
Just like every time we roll the dice in a movie musical, though, right?
Yeah, well, this one, I don't know why they're rolling the dice at all, but Jekyll and Hyde's coming to the screen, folks. Yeah. See, exactly. I'm going to flip through some because we could be here. Oh, speaking of the helicopter, Miss Saigon.
Okay.
Yes, yes, and Cameron McIntosh is tied to doing it. It's his working films company. Interesting, ooh. Cameron. Mm-hmm. Curiouser and curiouser, ooh. Said Alice to the Caterpillar. Matilda.
Nice.
That's exciting. Yeah. Memphis. Here's another. Here, Bob, this one's for you. They're redoing that. They're doing Sunset Boulevard.
Well, it's about time.
You know? and guess what? Glenn Close is going to do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's all she does now.
And they're redoing West Side Story.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. See, Bob, that doesn't work on radio. What are you doing, Bob?
You can't. Fix something that's not broken is always my opinion.
Would you like to know who the director is?
Yes.
It's one Steven Spielberg.
Hmm.
That's an interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Kushner is doing the screenplay.
Are they going to do like prequel style?
I have no... It just says it's. They're considering it being a new film adaptation. Well, does that mean new because it's redone or new?
Steven
Spielberg,
no. Yeah. So, Wicked, we kind of knew about. Spring Awakening, I've heard rumbles for a while. Uh-huh. South Pacific, why?
Yeah.
Didn't you learn with Harry Connick? although, let me just tell you who's in the cast.
Uh-huh.
The man who can do no wrong himself. No, it's not J.J. Watt. Hugh Jackman. And the other man that I said, when's he going to do a musical? And why my cousin's blowing up my phone today? One, Justin Timberlake.
Okay.
Wait.
Wow. All right.
He's going to be in the movie with one Hugh Jackman and Michelle Williams.
He's going to be Lieutenant Cable.
I don't know. It's very confusing. It's a lot to take in.
Remember that Hugh Jackman is a baritone? This is important.
That is very, number one.
Right out there.
I don't know. I've seen him in everything he's done, and he's never done wrong in my book. So
I can fix it.
Ever. But I don't know. That's okay. It's you.
We can still be
it must be the Gold Lame pants from Boy to Oz that just blinded me forever. I don't know. But let's play a little bit of Amelie, and let's get back and come talk to all you lovely guests. It's a little Amelie time. Patrick Page is working on his new musical with Reeve Carney. He's also starring as a crazy man on T. Leone, Madam Secretary. Yes. Mm. He's also a crazy cult leader right now if you're looking for some crazy Patrick Page. And then the Jason has been a little crazy because he's just on this road with the new and reimagined Greater Tuna Tour. So that's kind of funny. You got the crazies with the crazies. So, hello. Let's talk to Jarrett Productions. Y'all have an exciting show coming up here.
Yeah.
The Herd. I'm going to reintroduce my guest here, one David Jarrett.
Thank you.
Bob Tolero, you're a guest now. Come be my guest. Be our guest.
Guest mode.
New hat. Hello.
Be our guest. Hello. Amber Quick.
Hello.
Hello. And Jan Phillips.
Hi again.
Hello. So I have to tell you, I didn't know this show. You had brought it up when you were here last time, and right. I was like, oh, I'm a little curious about this. Yeah. And then reading more about it, I've giggled a bit. So why don't you tell folks about this show, The Herd? Give them a little nickel dime tour.
So when I was looking for new plays for the 2017-2018 season and reading a lot of scripts, I came across this script purely by chance. I had not heard of it myself. And I read it, and I was just captivated by it. Rory Kinnear is a British actor. He's the son of Roy Kinnear, who is a very well-known British character actor who's no longer with us.
I wondered that, but I didn't look. Okay.
And it's not an autobiographical play, but there is a lot in it that is taken from Rory's life. And I'll let Bob tell you a little bit more about the synopsis of the play itself. But after I had already gotten the rights to the play and doing some more research on it, I found that it had been done at Steppenwolf in the spring of 2015. And I thought, oh, well, I guess I do have good taste after all. But this is actually only the second production in America since that time. So we're very excited about this play. And it's, I'll let Bob tell you a little bit about the play itself.
I was saying yes. And you're in this show. And Bob
I have a small but pivotal role.
I was about to say, you play someone pretty good and important. Bob, you are the director.
Right.
The man in charge.
Yeah. Sometimes. it's great. It's a great play. It's a play about a family who is about to celebrate the 21st birthday of their severely disabled child. And the play basically reflects on the dynamics of this family as they prepare for a birthday party that the child does not even understand what a birthday party is. The family seems to be slightly dysfunctional, but
only slightly.
They're interesting characters, so. And it's British play, and it's a beautiful piece of watching the relationships of the parents, the grandparents. There are three generations are actually represented in this play, and we get to watch their relationships grow during this time as they simply wait for the child to arrive from his home where he is living at this time. So the wonderful thing about it is that these characters are so real and they have so many dimensions. And there are entrances of people from the past who show up and aren't necessarily expected at the
birthday
party.
Yeah, I read who some of the people that were showing up, and I was like, that's a dysfunction. And there's the fun in dysfunction.
Mom's ex-husband and the daughter's new boyfriend. What could possibly go wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So you have a little bit of a scene to prepare it, correct? Would
yes,
you like
we
to
do. We do have a
set
scene.
That up and maybe hear a little bit?
Yeah, Amber plays Claire, the daughter of Carol, who's played by Jan Phillips, and in the greatest bit of theatrical suspension of belief, I play the grandfather, the father of Jan and the grandfather of Amber. So you just have to really stretch your imagination on that.
That's what makes you the brilliant actor that you are, David.
There are revealed in the play. Many, you know, everybody has an agenda, of course. It's family.
Mm-hmm.
You said something about a dysfunctional family. Find me a functional one.
Right.
So in this is a particularly good scene between mother and daughter when the daughter's secret is revealed.
Great. This is Amber Quick and Jan Phillips from The Herd.
Is that true? Claire, tell me now, is that true?
What?
Is it true you're pregnant?
That's usually how you get to be a parent.
Answer me.
Yes, I'm pregnant. I was going to tell you this evening, that's why I didn't want him here.
It's his grandchild, too.
Fine.
How long?
Only 3 months.
3 months?
Three and a half.
Why didn't you tell me before?
You're not supposed to tell anyone until 3 months.
For God's sake.
What?
You could have told me if you'd wanted to. It's not a law.
Well, there you go.
Rather do it like this then, yes?
It's my life.
It's not just your life, Claire. You are part of a family. And don't try to make me feel bad.
I'm not trying to do anything.
So, what, do you not want it?
No, I mean, no. I'm happy.
Yeah, you look it. What were you thinking?
Who knows?
Oh, you must have been thinking something, Claire. How long have you known him?
Years. But we've only been together almost a year.
A year. Have you met his parents?
His dad, yes. His mom's dead.
And does he know?
Why does that matter?
It matters.
I don't think so.
Well, this is just how I dreamed it would happen.
I haven't done this to annoy you.
You haven't annoyed me, Claire. I'm not annoyed.
Don't. This is mine. Okay? I had to decide what I wanted to do. I didn't need you to decide for me.
Decide for you? Why would I decide for you? What do you mean you didn't need me to decide for you?
It doesn't matter. I'm telling you now, okay?
What
Mark
is that
and I
to
are
mean?
Having a baby. Maybe you could be pleased for us.
Pleased for you? Yes. If you had treated me like you cared what I thought, maybe I would be. Obviously you don't, though, so why
don't,
does that
don't
matter?
Don't make this about yourself.
Sorry?
Just for once, let me be happy.
Just for once?
That's...
For once? Good luck as a mother, Claire. You're going to need it. Children can be horribly ungrateful brats.
Ungrateful? Oh, don't you dare.
What?
I have done... Don't call me ungrateful. You're lucky to have had me.
Am I, Claire? Am I? I've been so lucky, haven't I? So blessed. A son with a mental age of a 10-month-old.
That's not my fault.
And a daughter with an emotional one of a 9-year-old. What, is it mine?
What? Don't be ridiculous.
What, is it my fault? Is that what you're saying? My fault? That Andy was born the way he is? Is that it?
No, don't
or,
be
or is it
ridiculous.
My fault you could never speak up for yourself?
Well, how could I with you around?
Why do you think it is I've always had to shout so loud, Claire? Because otherwise no one would ever listen to me. You think you became a mum overnight when your father left? You've no idea. Do you know what it's like?
We're all well aware.
Every time a phone rings, no, you're not aware, Claire. Every time someone drops round to say hello, every time I get a text, he's died. In my mind, he's died, okay? Every time he coughs, I'm imagining what to say at his funeral. That's my life, Claire. It's endless. Do you understand that? For some of us, it's not been a choice. It's not made us feel good about ourselves. We've just had to do it. Because no one else will. Just had to watch ourselves rot. Do you think you know what that's like?
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Some of us have been here too.
No, Claire, you don't. Because otherwise you wouldn't do what you have just done.
Fine.
Well, hello then. Yes, I know. I love it. The Baron's men all took a seat, and they're all watching, and they're like, oh.
We got a really nice email from Rory that we're going to reprint in our program, but I just wanted to say it's been extraordinarily consoling to see how universally aspects of the play have chimed with audiences both in the UK and America. Having become a parent myself since writing it, I have realized that at its heart lies less the difficulties and stresses of looking after someone with severe needs, but rather the emotional cost we all pay to love and be loved by family.
Oh, that's, yeah. Oh, I'm glad you're including that in your, that's very... Well said. I think I'm speaking for myself, but I think a lot of people can relate to that exact mm-hmm. statement. Everybody in this room shook their head, and there's what, 8 of us in here or 7 of us? No, there's 8 of us in here. I mean, oh, wow. Well, what a neat little piece. You have some, we're running out of time.
Sure.
So I know you have, there's 6 folks in, it's a 6-person show,
six,
correct?
Yeah, we keep getting more people in my shows. I don't know what's happening.
I was about to say, you're living on the edge here, you know. You grew. Any other shout outs or anything I know you have some different nights and special events going on. Where can folks go to find out more information on that?
JarrettProductions.com has all the information there. We open on April 6th, and we play through April 30th, mostly Thursday through Sunday, with some evening performances and matinees and an industry night that's on a Monday. So all of that is
I love the industry night that has all that stuff. And all the industry night and all that info is on that on the website. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you guys all for coming on. Please don't leave. I hope you stick around. And I hope you can, I didn't ask any of you guys if you could stay backstage for offstage. So I hope someone can stay backstage and we can learn a little about you. That'd be kind of fun hanging out at the dumpsters.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you so much. That was Jarrett Productions with their production of The Herd running at the Trinity Street Theater, April 6th through the 30th. For more information, you may visit JarrettProductions.com. Just like his mom. I Googled it my song choice. That would be the Florence Henderson in the musical Fanny. And that was the birthday song. Dun, dun, dun. I'm going to fly through this Today in Theater History like in two quickity seconds so that we can move on to the Baron's Man, because that sounds a little bit cooler than what happened a long time ago. but I am going to say 1951, it was The King and I with one Yul Brynner and Gertrude Lawrence. I mean, I don't know how we don't talk about that. I guess we're going to talk heavy. 1950 was Cherry Orchard with Joshua Logan. I was like, oh, interesting. I was excited about this. 1981, I Love Me, My Candor and Ebb, Woman of the Year. I know. Lauren Bacall was in the musical based on the film with Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn. Dustin Hoffman in 84 brought back the Willie Loman in Death of a Salesman. Mm. 2004, Actors Equity celebrates its 90th anniversary.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? 2004, yeah. So oh, we're already over the 100. Nazi. Newsies was in 2012, and Newsies. I am just going to play literally a little teeny snippet of One of the Boys, Women of the Year, because I am this song. I'm one of the girls. Well, hello. We are back. We are back with the Baron's Man.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello. Okay, y'all are in one of my favorite places out at the Curtin Theater.
So beautiful.
So let's just start by, yes, jazz hands for that one.
Spirit fingers.
Yay. So y'all are doing a show that will be opening this weekend too. So yes. Yeah.
Oh, we both open on Friday.
I love that. We both had the shows before the openers.
And much like The Herd, this is the second time that As You Like It has ever been done in America.
Oh, very good.
It's very exciting.
Oh, well, how lucky for you. How did you get that William Shakespeare to allow that?
I'm very persuasive.
Oh, that Kate. Let me introduce our guests again. You know what? Let's just go round table and everybody say hello.
Hi, I'm Mike Osborne. I'm actually directing the show.
Love it.
Are we all supposed to say actually?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Kate Clark, and I'm actually playing Rosalind.
And I'm Robert Dyke, and I'm actually playing Jayquees.
I love it. Jayquees. So you guys are doing As You Like It. If someone has been living under a rock and doesn't know what As You Like It is, can you give them a quick little
director,
a mini synopsis?
So it basically is the story of our heroine, Rosalind, who has to flee persecution from her evil court. We actually gender bent the Duke into a Duchess.
She's
fleeing from, you know, her aunt. So that's a lot of fun. So she travels through the Forest of Arden, and she encounters all the wacky forest characters and eventually falls in love. And, you know.
And when he says eventually, that's
it's almost instantly.
Act one, scene two. Is when I
very early on. There's a lot of, you know, first sighting, falling in love at first sight sorts of things. And as typical of Shakespeare, she dresses as a man and has the mistaken identity, and then it's all revealed at the end, and then everybody gets married.
Quadruple wedding.
Yeah, Shakespeare does like the multi-wedding.
Yeah, he does. It's so efficient.
I wonder if he would have been a fan of the television show Sister Wives.
Oh, maybe.
But bum-shh. I'm kidding. That's why I don't do comedy. But I have wondered often how much time he spent in the woods, because he writes some of the most crazy stuff going down in the woods. And I'm like, what did William Shakespeare do in the woods all the time? But he writes such wonderful, wonderful stuff. So why don't you tell us a little bit? You're playing Rosalind.
Yes.
So you are this woman who is banished and sent to the woods and all over the place. But why don't you tell us a little more about Rosalind than little explanation.
Rosalind gets kicked out of court by, in our production, her aunt, her usurping aunt. So her father, Duke Sr., is already gone. In our production, the sister has already been like, peace, I'm taking over your kingdom. So the Duke has gone to the Forest of Arden. And then at the beginning of the play, the Duchess decides like, yeah, you need to go too. So Rosalind is getting ready to try to figure out her life. And her best friend, Celia, who is the Duchess's daughter, says, hey, don't go by yourself. I'll go with you. So it's the first part of the show is really about their journey to the forest together. And that friendship is a really, really huge important part of the play. I think it gets lost sometimes in synopses because there's so much focus on all of the love aspects of the play. But the first love aspect of the play is Celia and Rosalind.
There is some serious woman power,
yeah,
like which you don't always see in a Shakespeare piece like that. Absolutely. Like that is like bosom buddies, not like we're gonna kill you and take over. Like
right?
That.
Yeah.
No, they support each other even though you know things are getting rough and you know they're at each other's throats. But then the next moment they're hugging and making up.
Yeah.
That, well, that's typical of
it's typical
women's
stuff, right?
Sister yeah. stuff. I know.
Neither
I was
one
like,
of them
I've
has
done
siblings, and both of them are missing one parent. In our production, she doesn't have a dad, and I don't have a mom. So, you know, they're extremely
close. You're bonded.
Yeah,
you're bonded. And Robert, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you're playing?
Well, Jaques is this character in the forest that they discover. He's a melancholy person, or at least he prescribes for that. And whenever the Duke, who's been newly banished here, needs a laugh, he usually winds this character up, and this character will just go on and on and on and on.
And on.
And on. And as he's like a melancholy person, so he runs into Rosalind and Rosalind's love Orlando throughout the play and is soundly trounced by them. He is sort of almost banished from their happiness, which he's fine to do. He doesn't mind being banished. And yeah, he's really kind of a weird character.
I was, you know, he is a weird character. What a fun role to play. Have you?
It's
had
a huge stretch for Dyke.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's
why
really.
Why is everyone laughing?
He's, well, you he heard has one of the best speeches in
two
in Shakespeare. Yeah.
Really yeah. More. I pretty more. Oh yeah.
Yeah,
all the world's is something.
More.
Yeah.
All the world's is something. What is it?
Or
what's
other.
That lot? What yeah. is it?
And huh? all the men and people are they just hang.
They're
anyway.
Staff and stuff.
Yeah.
They just hang.
That is a great speech.
So, and you're out at the Curtain Theater, which is, if people have been living under a rock and haven't heard us talk about this wonderful space, it's out at Coldwater Canyon Creek, out on Richard Garriott's estate. It is such a gem. We are so lucky in this town to have a space like that, and that Richard is so giving.
Yes.
And saying, use thy space.
Yes.
Yes.
And bring the public in.
Yes.
It's magical. It's a really different and unique way to experience a show. And you guys have some different like little events going on.
Yes.
While you're going on there, don't you have stage combat one night, so, like a dinner night, or don't you? You there's right. different things happening.
There's a lot of stuff happening. So on next Friday on April 7th, we're actually having our education night, which is going to consist. It's going to start at 7 o'clock, and it's going to consist of a fight demo. So we had our fight choreographer. He's going to come out and show us how Shakespearean.
And who is your
is
fight
done.
Choreographer?
It's Phil Canzano.
Hello, Phil. Shout out, Phil.
Shout out to Phil. And then we're also going to do a dance demo as well.
So oh, I missed the dance demo when I was reading.
Dancing, and we're going to have an actor talk back after the show.
We're calling it Arden Academy.
Arden Academy.
Okay, that's funny. David Jarrett enjoyed that. I heard his he was giggling in the background. I love it. Arden Academy. And are you open this weekend?
Yes.
This Friday.
So
this
how, Friday. Oh God, what a perfect time of year to be out
it's
there
so
right
beautiful.
Now,
it is
too.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, the pecan trees are starting to bud, so it's just when yeah. watching them sort of like flower over the space is an amazing thing. And the river floats by, boats.
Is it hard to
by.
Concentrate on stage at times being out there at this time of year?
Only when the houseboats come by going.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, that's in the summer. I do
the
Young Shakespeare with the
exciting.
Kids. But having to explain to children for Young Shakespeare, now don't stop when the boat goes by and you hear. I was like, just keep talking, because it's going to happen.
Oh, yes, it will.
I mean, we're lucky, you know, we have scene partners that are really, like, linked in and hooked in, so no.
Well, it's not that crazy summer. But you know what? I think it also adds a special touch.
It's like Penfold in the train.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
When they have to have train breaks, we don't take boat breaks. But
let's be honest. How many times have you heard the train or felt your seat rumble in a Broadway theater? I can't even count so many times.
And there's that helicopter.
Right. And then that's right. David Jarrett's like,
bring it back.
And don't forget, there's the helicopter. You know, David, I always say that every show, there's always a good show if there's music, fire, or what's the other one? Flying. I guess it falls into flying. Never mind. As I said, what about helicopters? But I guess it falls into flying. So is there a helicopter in As You Like It in the curtain?
If Lindsay Plinsky, our producer, were here, she would immediately say, that's not in the budget.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the other folks that are working on this show?
So as she mentioned, Lindsay Plinsky, she's our producer. She's also done Liz Estrada, which we've been on the show before. And
Lindsay's been a guest here
several times, and I'm really sad she can make it today.
Kind of bummed Lindsay wasn't here today, to be honest with you. Yeah. Lindsay, I'm a little bummed.
Life happens.
It does. Life happens. Lisa and Nick aren't here either, so I'm going to pretend she chose not to come, and it's all me.
So we also have Laura Trezise, who's doing our stage management. And then we have actually my wife, Renee Osborne, who's also doing producery work as well as our front of house. We have Robin Banter, who did our dance choreography.
You're doing really well. Normally I put people on the spot like that and they're looking around and I'm I'm impressed, Michael.
Connor, our awesome Orlando, and then Mikey Pratt, who is our awesome Oliver, who is Orlando's evil brother. There are lots of evil sibling relationships in this show. They're both fantastic.
I like this show. It's a fun hilarity kind of crazy town.
There's a lot of wonderful moments happening in it.
And how have you directed? I mean, how have you directed at the curtain before?
I have not. I've been directed many a time.
So how is that from going from the stage? Because it's a different space blocking, you have to think differently.
I'm very happy I've been able to have that experience. So now I understand it from both sides, from both the acting side and the directing side. But I've got a wonderful cast who they respond to suggestions, they offer suggestions. Mm-hmm. Robert Dyke, in fact, is my dramaturg. He's been extremely helpful.
I'm still the same person.
Still the same person.
You're wearing dramaturg hat too, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
As happens in the Berensman, we all wear many hats.
As that happens in the art that we do theater here in Austin, we like to wear. I think all of us, though, being creative minds, we're kind of like, would you be happy wearing one hat?
No. I'm doing the music for the. Well, I'm doing some of the music for the show.
Are you writing original music?
But Travis Hagen, who is one of our brand new, he's a brand new player with the Barons Men. He took Lover and His Last. Is that the
Lover and His Last?
And composed some original music for it, and it's beautiful. And Gene Story, who has been in a billion Barons Men shows, but I had never heard him sing. He's playing Amiens, and he has a lovely, lovely singing voice. And the two of them work so beautifully together. So they're doing that, which is the music throughout the show, and then I'm doing some intermission music stuff. No original music, just bossing people around so they get their notes right.
Yep.
That's all.
I still love that all the music. Ironically, the song that I chose to go out is it's a Lover and a Lass.
Yay!
It's a version that I took
Royal
Shakespeare did. That's kind of a little folky and crazy and poppy at the same time. I giggled. I was like, "Oh, this is fun." So you were in my head last night. I must have heard you just saying it's a Lover and a Lass, and I put it in there. We're just about out of time. Anything else that you want to make sure listeners know?
Well, if you'd like more information about the show, go to thebarensmen.org.
Yes, because you have the first weekend, you're doing two nights, and then the next two weekends, you go into three nights,
that's
right?
That's correct.
Right.
So, and all that information is up there. And then I saw the jousting was coming y'all closed.
The week after we close, we're doing a jousting tournament.
Yeah, I saw that too. I got a little excited. And that's all up on your website and information too. Great. Well, thank you all so much for coming on.
Nicole.
Don't leave. Stick around.
Okay.
Because I want you guys to come hang out at the dumpsters with me for backstage.
When you put it like that.
Yeah, I know. How can you resist? That was, and Robert, now I want to say your name incorrectly.
Dyke.
I know. And I looked at it and it almost came out and I was like, my gosh.
It's a last name and an adjective.
Yeah. So Robert Dyke, Michael Osborne, Kate Clark with the Barons Men, As You Like It, at the Curtain Theater, opening this weekend, March 31st, running through April 22nd. For more information, you may visit barensmen.org. It was a lover. Isn't that funny? It's a album from Royal Shakespeare Company, and
wow.
Some of the other songs were totally other wackadoodles. So I don't know, but I have to say thank you, Bob Tolero, for co-hosting, and then I have to say thank you to literally Michael, Kate, Harry, Rob, Jan, Amber, and David for being a co-circle of hosting. Yeah. I had a lot of fun today. I hope you guys had some fun.
Yeah.
I know some of you are going to stick around. We're going to be right back. Austin Monitor News is next. We'll be back next week when we take a look at what's happening offstage and on the air. And just so you know, folks, it's what Veruca says.
Birds will sing, hey, ring a ring.
Hello, I am backstage amongst the dumpsters after So, the musical about a girl who doesn't know how to use a Bernina and her struggles into what she'll do. Y'all all looking at me. We're just talking about how you hit a sew.
The musical So.
Musical So.
I love it.
Yes. Have you had that? Aren't you starring in it, Bob Tolero?
Yes. Yes. I'm the Reaper.
The Reaper.
Oh, sow and my.
Reap. So what you reap, reap what you sow.
Oh, my gosh. It's homonym time.
It's homonym time. I always remember Bernina. We were talking about how high school performing arts. I went to a high school performing arts, and people would always say to me and say to all of us, is it just like Fame? Because Fame had been on
right.
You know, around, I'm that old. So Fame was around, and the original Fame, not the one with Carol Burnett's daughter later on in the reboot, no, Mia Fame. Peebles, the original Debbie Allen Fame.
Right.
And they'd always be like, do you guys break out in a song and dance? Like, really thought we just broke out into song and dance in the thing. So one day, Tisha Creer, God, I wish I knew what Tisha Creer was doing. Tisha Creer jumped up in sewing class one day and just started singing, sewing, sewing, sewing on Bernina, sewing. And everybody got up and started dancing. And I was like, oh my God, we really just
had a
Fame moment, like in the middle of class. But that Molly Dean was my costume teacher. Wow, that's weird. I remember those people. But I remember that moment a little visually. It's stuck in my head.
You're good.
Stuck in my head. But yeah, Tisha Creer popped in my head as I was talking about So the Musical. She's probably starring in it right now, and I didn't realize it was Tisha. How you doing? So we got the folks from Berensman back here. And before we do backstage, I learned that y'all had a little scene. So can I put you right on the spot? And
absolutely.
Maybe you give us a little bit of it, and then we can talk backstage.
Good. Yeah.
Awesome. You want to set it up? Because you're the director.
So yeah, just so in the forest, people cross paths because that's what you do. Because everyone's in a forest, and what else are you going to do? So at one point in time, Rosalind, who is cross-dressing as a boy and is in the middle of a sort of furtive seduction of Orlando in the forest.
Innocent.
Orlando is. And she runs into Jaques, who is this sort of perennial grump who lives in the forest and is melancholy. And for some reason, the grump decides to talk to the most sparkling personality on the stage. And this is that scene.
Great.
And then you have Orlando coming in later. He's late for his appointment with Rosalind.
He is late.
And so I'll be playing the role of Orlando here today because our actual Orlando can make it.
Well, it makes it even more special.
Stunt Orlando. Right.
Stunt Orlando.
Stunt Lando.
Understudy.
I pray thee, pretty youth, let me be better acquainted with thee.
They say you are a melancholy fellow.
I am so. I do love it better than laughing.
Those that are in the extremity of either are abominable fellows and betray themselves to every modern censure worse than drunkards.
Tis good to be sad and say nothing.
Why then, tis good to be a post.
I have neither the scholar's melancholy, which is emulation, nor the musician's, which is fantastical, nor the courtier's, which is proud, nor the soldier's, which is ambitious. Nor the lawyers, which is politic, nor the ladies, which is nice, nor the lovers, which is all of these. But it is a melancholy of mine own, compounded of many simples, extracted from many objects, and indeed the sundry contemplation of my travels, in the which my often rumination wraps me in a most humorous sadness.
A traveler! By my faith, you have great reason to be sad. I fear you have sold your own lands to see other men's. Than to have seen much and to have nothing is to have rich eyes and poor hands.
Yes, I have gained my experience.
And your experience makes you sad. I had rather have a fool to make me merry than experience to make me sad, and to travel for it too.
Good day and happiness, dear Rosalind.
Nay then, God be with you, and you talk in blank verse.
Farewell, Monsieur Traveler. Why, how now, Orlando? Where have you been all this while? You a lover? And you serve me such another trick? Never come in my sight more.
My fair Rosalind, I come within an hour of my promise.
Break an hour's promise in love? He that will divide a minute into a thousand parts, and break but a part of the thousandth part of a minute in the affairs of love? It may be said that Cupid hath clapped him o' the shoulder, but I'll warrant him heart whole.
Pardon me, dear Rosalind.
Nay, and you be so tardy, come no more in my sight. I had as lief be wooed of a snail.
Of a snail?
Aye, of a snail. For though he come slowly, he carries his house on his head. A better jointure, I think, than you make a woman. Besides, he brings his destiny with him.
What's that?
Why, horns, which such as you are fain to be beholding to your wives for. But he comes armed in his fortune and prevents the slander of his wife.
Virtue is no horn maker, and my Rosalind is virtuous.
And I am your Rosalind.
I love it. Oh, God, I love it. And yes. Bob was, just as y'all were sitting there, we're talking about audience member, Bob was giggling it. And like,
well, you when I hear a thing like, it's good to be sad and say nothing. I just think, oh my God, have we all been through that? You
know? Yes, yes, yes.
It's another one of those.
It's amazing. I hear phrases like,
oh. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. It's enjoyable. Jacob is such a strange but wonderful and satisfying character.
Because Rosalind doesn't relate to that. Right, no, she doesn't get that. That's not part of her experience because, you know, she was very sad at the beginning of the play, and it takes her, I don't know, a minute to like flip that on its head. Her best friend says like, "No, come on, be cheerful." And she's like, "Okay."
What's that? Oh, yeah. Oh.
Okay, yeah. And it's not cuz she's stupid. It's just part of her personality. She's very smart. She just
irrepressible.
She's irrepressible. She just bounces right back. Yeah. I think she thinks that's her only choice.
Is that you, Kate? Are you the same way?
I want to say yes. Let's say yes.
So where did you grow up?
Oh, everywhere. We're gypsies in my family, which I used to say all the time. But since I have like this mass of dark hair, sometimes I say, oh, we're gypsies in my family. And people are like, really? And I'm like, no, I'm not Romani. I'm not saying we're gypsies. I'm saying we moved a lot. We
moved a lot. Where were you born?
In New Orleans, but we moved when I was very young.
So you've had a little taste of
the whole... all over the place. I lived in California. I went to school in upstate New York.
Where?
Syracuse University.
I graduated from Fayetteville Manlius High School.
What?
My senior year. I went to
Syracuse. That's wild.
Yeah.
That's so wild.
You say Fayetteville and people look at you and I'm like, you know what I'm talking about.
It's near the Wegmans.
Yep. And I miss Wegmans. Wegmans and Dick's Sporting Goods. Come home from Syracuse. I guess a little Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is from Syracuse too. I think he went to East Syracuse High. And a good hot dog at Hyde's in Liverpool.
That's wild.
Yep. And then the largest toxic lake right there in Solvay, Onondaga Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good time. Syracuse. I was there for a year.
I visited there once.
Where was your favorite place? I mean, if you lived all these different places, where was your favorite? Do you have a favorite place that you've lived?
So I know this is cheating because I do know what the word favorite means, but I have two.
You have two.
I lived in Virginia for a really long time. We live in Charlottesville, and it's so beautiful there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just love all the architecture, everything, like, you know, Jeffersonian about Charlottesville, UVA, and all that stuff. So I love Virginia. I love the Blue Ridge Mountains. I lived there as a kid. And then I actually, it's a long story, but I was going to school for theater at Syracuse, and I dropped out and moved to California. I moved to the Bay Area, and that's my other favorite place. So I guess the coasts. I'm like a coastal.
I was like,
person.
You're a coastal. The coast calls you. So how did you get into theater? Is moving around so much?
Apparently it's something that I did right away. My grandmother used to have a lot of stories about me just entertaining people. She had this story about me being in a bank we were very little. It was my mom, my grandmother, when I was very little, they were grown-up age. And we were just waiting in this bank, and apparently I started singing a song to, like, entertain the other people in the bank. That was just a, like,
I
a thing
love it.
That I,
that's great.
That I did it. So I don't know. It's just something that I was interested in right away. And my family is not like that at all. I'm like the alien child of my family. That's not their thing.
It's okay though. We're the people that keep our families vivaciously living,
yes.
And they live vicariously through us and keep the spunk and the funk in the family's life.
Totally.
So how did you end up in Austin?
I came here for graduate school.
Oh, and you never left.
And I'm part of the problem. I'm sorry, Austin. I'm part of the problem. But now I've lived here for more than a decade. So I feel like...
You're adopted.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Bob. Come on, Dykey. So mean.
Is Robert over there just hounding to you?
Yeah.
Giving you a problem?
Yeah, yeah. Always.
All right. Robert, you've been on backstage before, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
A while back. When we did actual Measure, I think it was.
I was about to say it was it's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's a Measure reunion.
It's
here.
A Measure
right.
for
it's
Measure.
It's the Duke and Isabella.
That's right. That worked out.
So I'm gonna make you tell us something that we wouldn't know about you, that you didn't tell us before. Maybe something even your castmate and director here may not know. Maybe even Mr. Bob Tilaro doesn't know.
Well, here we go. I've worked with Bob Tilaro when we did Comedy of Errors for Austin Shakespeare.
We
way back
did.
In the day.
I couldn't name a year,
how long
but yes.
Ago?
Yeah,
that
1990. I remember because...
Are you good with years? I'm
George
with years.
W. George Bush was doing the commencement speech for UT, and I was happily not able to go.
Was it that long ago, really?
Yeah.
1990?
Yes.
I moved here in 86.
Am I making that up? Is it 2000?
No, I was I was pretty young in 1990.
Sure. A lot of folks were.
Graduating high school from Syracuse, from Fayetteville Manlius. Because I did my first year at Syracuse and my senior year at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, I was at a
high... Overachiever?
No, I was at the high school performing arts for all those years ahead of time, and I wanted to go for theater, music, and dance, not just one cluster. So I spent my entire high school career going to summer school to get my academics out of the way.
You are an overachiever. That's amazing.
So that I could take... So I could party in high school and only go to, like, 2-3 academics a day. Out of 9 periods, 7 were dance, music, and theater.
Amazing.
Right.
And the other two, because I went and got all the other done. But when you transfer to a normal high school your senior year, you're done with everything.
Wow.
So I was kind of like,
all right,
what am I
going
to do? And they're like, you can take extra gym. And I'm like, cross-country skiing should not be in gym class.
Yeah.
But it is, because we're in Syracuse.
That sounds amazing.
Well, actually, when I was in my senior year, I had 1-4 periods full, and then I had 5th off, and then I had bowling for 6th period, and we only went every other day.
Oh, my God. That
was my favorite
Did you have
class.
A good bowling team,
I
though?
Love
like,
bowling.
It wasn't a team. We were just bowling.
There was a professional bowler at FM at the high school. There
what?
Was, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's why it just made me go, wow. Were you good at bowling?
The only time I was good was when I hit 7 strikes in a row for some reason.
God.
Otherwise, I'm a 120, 130 kind of person, but
now
I was like
you,
240.
Do you sing Grease too when you're bowling?
We're going to sing all the time. Constantly. We're so much singing.
No, I just go like, darn, ding, dang it. I curse a lot.
It's okay. At least I'll have to edit out a bit.
So was that the super personal thing we just learned about?
I was
you,
like,
that
I
you
don't
worked
think
with Bob or that
bowling.
You
bowling and
you
Bob,
once
you're not
good
at bowling.
Bowling.
Yeah, I mean, the one night.
That one night. Yes. Yeah. Wow. That's no one else
night
knows
of bowling.
That stuff.
Wow. That's so beautiful. Thank you for opening up.
Sure.
You know what, Robert? You've done a lot of roles and you've done a lot of shows.
Uh-huh.
Is there a role or a show you haven't done yet that you would really like just want to sink your teeth into?
Is it Miss Saigon?
No. No, I want
to
be a helicopter.
He wants to
no.
be the helicopter.
Anyway. Actually, there is. I have one, and I'm not much of a musical person, although I recently did, did Assassins like
what
a couple
a
years back.
What a great show.
Yeah,
and he
was
very good.
Show. Yeah, but I have wanted to play Pontius Pilate in Jesus Christ Superstar.
What a great role. What first of all, great effing show.
Yes.
And what a awesome, evil awesome
yeah.
role.
Yeah. And who also has to sort of like, you know, privilegedly explain himself, like why I'm doing this. It was just a lot of really good. I mean, I like the musical and I heard it, I think, first in my college days. And it just stuck with me, whereas other musicals kind of just like frittered off. That one had a lot of stuff to say to me, I guess, as a young lad.
I think it's because this is my take on it. I think because they were so young when they wrote it. They were 18. And yes. And when you write...
They were seriously 18?
They're seriously that young? They were 17 when they wrote Joseph.
Okay. Jeez Louise.
We didn't.
So you got to forgive the red and blue and gold.
We didn't talk about that. I really hate Joseph.
So no, I have the passion. And Lisa loves it. I know. And people get mad at me. And I'm like, it's okay. It. You can like just it. I just... Mm. And speaking of Syracuse, I did Jesus Christ Superstar for multiple years at Salt City Center, which is the longest running. Every year, Salt City Center, they're famous in Syracuse for doing their Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, wow. Really? Awesome. Oh, wow. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And that kind of funny. Bring all the Syracuse. There's a lot of Syracuse going on.
It was really good. I don't know if any of you guys got to see it in Wimberley. It was extremely good. The leads were people that, like, dear friends and also people that I worked with before. Oh, actually, someone who was just in Faustus with us, Daniel Klein, played Jesus Christ when they did it at Wimberley. And he was excellent.
They haven't done it a long time in Austin. The last time was Zach, and it was the bilingual production. So,
was that?
Probably like 12 years now. So Mario and I were talking about it. Jesus Cristo was like it was probably 2008, 2007. Mm-hmm. Okay. No, maybe it was 2008. But
so
close.
A long while.
It's been a while. So, well, all those directors out here, there's a Pontius Pilate waiting.
Just waiting.
Just waiting.
I mean, I can actually sing that.
Waiting.
Practice it a billion years. So.
All right. Well, if they're looking to get hold of you to cast you, how do they find you, Robert?
They can Google me. I'm around.
All right. There we go.
That was my call to action.
Michael, where are you from?
I don't believe
you've been on backstage.
I have not. The last time I came was for Lisa Strada, and I was just the producer then, so I was just like,
I was about to say, I don't think I remember you sticking around here, so now you're part of the guinea pig.
So now I'm part of it.
Project, too. The guinea pig project. So where are you from?
So actually, I'm actually a military brat, Air Force brat. I was born in Germany and moved around a bit, and we landed here in 1989, and I've been here ever since.
Wow. Oh, so you were, that's rarity that you didn't travel as much as you did. I mean.
Yeah, it was for about 10 years. We went from Germany to Louisiana to Colorado, back to Germany, and then here.
So did you, were you inspired by Rocky Das Musical? I'm just kidding. You guys laugh at me, but Rocky the Musical started in Hamburg, and it was Rocky Das Musical long before it was Rocky the Musical.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's way more fun to say Rocky Das Musical than Rocky the Musical. But that was only a few years ago. So did you do theater? Did you start doing theater when you were in Germany? Or was that something?
No.
How did you start doing theater?
How did I get
theater,
started?
Michael?
Well, I hadn't had any theater experience until I joined the Barensmen. And they drafted me as a musician. They needed a drummer for a show. And they knew me. And they say, hey, you're a drummer. Come drum for us. I'm like,
so
okay.
That is interesting.
That's great. What can you do?
And just kept building up. I played Don Pedro in Much Ado last year, and that was my biggest role ever.
How is it now then to step into what made you go, okay, I'm a drummer, but yeah, I'm going to act now. And okay, now wait, now let's just take this another step. Hold the breath. Stop. I'm a direct now. I mean, how do you go from there to there to there?
Well, it's kind of an interesting journey because you start off like just as a small actor, small bit parts, and then you get the bug, right?
Yeah.
And you want to do more and more, so I start trying for bigger and bigger roles, and then you get them, and then so I was like, I want to try some of the backstage stuff. So I did producing, I did stage managing for Faustus, our last show, and then they let me direct this one.
Oh, that is awesome.
Quadruple threat.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Bob.
Just threatening all around.
Great stuff.
We're just chit-chatting away. Lisa's going to be like, Nicole, this is the longest backstage ever.
Well,
she's like right now going, yes, Nicole.
Lisa, if you had been here, but you were not here.
Yeah.
I know, but snack it. We're not. There's two things I have to do. One, you have to tell us something about you that we don't know, Bob Tolero.
Let's see.
Don't make it about bowling.
Or knowing yourself, yes.
Or not. Once I worked with Bob Tolero on a show.
I was a monastery for 5 years.
Oh. I did not know that.
Yes, I was a monk.
Were you really?
Yes.
Not acting, like real life.
Real life.
Get out.
Upstate New York.
How long ago?
Upstate New York.
Where in upstate New York?
Beacon, Newburgh area.
Oh, that's pretty area. I thought you were going to say Schenectady. That's where mom is now.
Yeah, right. No, so, yeah, sure.
We're going to have to explore that one
that's
more.
That's a chapter in the book.
I was about to say, Lisa's listening right now, and I'm like, she's like, don't explore that without me. So we're going to save the monastery for another time. But what's your favorite monastery musical song?
Is there a song from a musical about monasteries?
No, just all the Gregorian chants. I feel like, positive five.
Yeah, I feel like there's nuns have
Kyrie
all the songs.
Kyrie eleison.
Yeah.
Kyrie eleison.
Oh, my
that's
God.
Good.
That's it.
Yeah. I like the 18th century version.
What is the, there is a musical with monks.
Well,
I can't remember the name.
The
of
only
it.
Thing I can think of is the Monty Python and them hitting themselves in the head with the book. Like that's all I can think of.
Monks are funny, nuns are funny.
We'll see you guys next week.